and Africa Oye's Fall Membership Drive Special. Noon to 4 p.m., Thursday, October the 17th, here on KBOO Portland.
Got him? Okay, good morning. This is Per Fogring, and our show is Fight the Empire. And my guest, who we're trying to contact right now, is Dmitry Orlov. And he was born in the Soviet Union, grew up in Leningrad, and then he came to this country at an early age. And so he was able to witness the collapse in the Soviet Union. And then he came to this country, and he's written a bunch. He wrote some articles about the Soviet Union's collapse. And today we're going to talk mainly about his most recent book, The Five Stages of Collapse. And that is a premium for this show. And it's a real good book, and we hope to get him momentarily. He works in the sort of the internet field, software field, and lives in Boston on a sailboat, I believe. Anyway, that is a book we're going to talk about as soon as we get hold of Dmitry Orlov. The thing about this book is that he talks about different stages of collapse, and they are basically a financial collapse, which is happening already. We've sort of been witnessing that ourselves. And then commercial and political collapse, and finally a social collapse and cultural collapse, and which is it's like they get progressively worse, these stages, and hopefully there are ways of forestalling them, even though we are kind of in the beginning of this five-stage event with the financial collapse, and that's sort of where we'll start. As soon as we get to Dmitry Orlov, I'd like to talk about, he wrote an article comparing the Soviet Union with the United States. And it was a very surprising conclusion he came to, is that in some ways, the Soviet Union's kind of funky old system was better able to withstand collapse than the U.S. For one thing, in the Soviet Union, I guess people really didn't pay rent, and they lived in these kind of ugly old apartment buildings, which were very sturdy, and they had some kind of free health care, and they had cheap transportation. And so even though the economic system fell apart, these things remained. People didn't They didn't pay rent, so they didn't have to move out of their apartments. And they were able to get around on the antiquated transportation system. And they had their... one thing that really fed the people was everybody had their little garden plots. And people who had their... had little summer vacation homes out in the country, they had... they had little mini farms going on there. So in some ways, the food delivery system had fallen apart, but people were growing their own food. I think it was estimated at one time that in the Soviet Union that over 50% of all the food grown was grown on these individual garden plots, which is really kind of amazing when you think about it. And so because of these things, they came through the collapse kind of in fairly unscathed. And he compares that to what things would be like in the U.S., where if you, everything in the U.S., we have certainly a much more affluent economy and in sort of much more up-to-date. And that may be just a problem. For one thing, if you depend on a paycheck, if you miss a few paychecks and don't pay your rent, you might be out on the street. And if you have some kind of a serious illness, you could be bankrupted. And so in some ways, it's a very strong economy and very modern, but it's also at the same time, it is very fragile. And so that is one thing that gives people pause, that a collapse in this country, it could be much more difficult for people to live through. You know, it'd be much more of a social disruption because we depend on our paychecks. Just a food delivery system or any kind of a delivery system, it's sort of they have this, they don't have warehouses as much as they used to. They have this on one-day delivery system where food markets, they get their food as they need it. They don't really store it up. So, you know, you have a few days' supply. And I do believe we have Dmitry Orlov. Good morning, Dmitry. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning. Great to be with you.
Yes, I've been already filling in people about your career, your book. And I've been talking a little bit about the collapse in the Soviet Union and how it compares to the United States. You wrote that article about 5 years ago, and I thought it was an eye opener because you know we've sort of been conditioned to think of the Soviet Union in kind of largely negative terms, but in some ways they emerged there through their collapse. So can you tell us a little bit about that? Because you were there, right?
Well, yes, I visited there several times, extended visits, before, during, and after the collapse. And I saw the situation evolve. And Russia went pretty far down the rabbit hole of, depression and hopelessness and violence, disintegration of all kinds, the economic transformation that went on there almost went entirely off the rails because of the botched privatization scheme that Western economists tried to foist on the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, Russia recovered. And that's the amazing part of the story. I don't know whether the United States will be able to recover as well as Russia has, because Russia is still really very, very wealthy country in terms of its natural resources, instead of the depleted state of the United States, which is basically like Swiss cheese in terms of the amount of drilling that went on here. It's also very wealthy in terms of its people. It has very highly educated and literate mm-hmm. population, which is not the case here.
Well,
it recovered.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think we're going to have to take a little break to talk to our friends who are going to talk about KBOO for a few minutes, and then we'll get back to our guest, Dmitry Orlov. So let's go out to Membership Central.
Thank you, Per. Yes, we're here, and we are talking to you about how we're going to keep our culture, our social structure together, and the one way that we're asking you to do that now is by providing part of that economic engine by sending us your funds by calling 877-500-5266. We here at KBOO are helping to weave together that social fabric and provide some of that resiliency in our local area. The model that we are doing is being replicated throughout the country because people realize that there's a lot of value to this. And what Mr. Orlov is talking about happening in the Soviet Union, well, you know, there's no reason that something like that could not happen here. So what we have to do is we have to come to you, listener, and we have to say to you, call 877-500-5266. It seems simplistic, but when you do that, when you pledge that support, you help to prevent us from experiencing some of the things that Mr. Orlov is talking about in his book, which we have several copies available at a $60 minimum pledge. You can get this book, The Five Stages of Collapse, Survivor's Toolkit. It's paperback by Dmitry Orlov, and he talks about these categories and stages of collapse that Per is discussing with him here today. You can get that book. All you got to do, a minimum $60 pledge. That's our sustaining membership. $60 a year works out to 16 cents a day. You call 877-500-5266 and help to be part of that fabric to keep us going.
That's right. Once again, the telephone number, 877-500-5266. And I find this really intriguing. This is a topic that gets discussed in our kitchen often. My husband, Anthony, is a solar architect. He's been working in the field for about 40 years. We have a housemate who I refer to as an intellectual farmhand who reads anything he can get his hands on about what's going on in the big picture. He's in his early 30s. He's looking forward to a United States that will be markedly different than the one that I grew up in. So this kind of information, where else do you get it? KABU, 877-500-5266. The five stages of collapse could be yours for a $60 minimum pledge. We'd be really happy to pass on this book, this information to you. And, you know, listen to what Per this interview is doing and see if, you know, maybe that $60 is worth it. The book itself is worth $20. So, you know, you're really getting a good deal gift.
The way you do that is... The way you do that is by calling 877-500-5266. Pick up the phone, call now. Let's get back to Per and his guest, Dmitry Orlov, The Five Stages of Collapse, A Survivor's Toolkit.
Okay, well, Dmitry, my understanding is that one reason the people in the Soviet Union got through all this is that they didn't have a landlord to cope with.
Yes. Basically, the Soviet economy was really structured around direct access to resources, such as a place to live. Most on which they could grow their own food, and also it's a home cooking culture. People didn't go out to eat a lot, and there was a lot of foraging that went on. You know, the mushroom picking is a big event.
Mm-hmm.
There was quite a bit of hunting and trapping going on in the outlying areas. So people had a lot to fall back on, and they weren't really just dependent on this little swipey card that they take to the supermarket, which is like their key to the world. And if that thing doesn't work, then they're basically starving.
Mm-hmm.
They also didn't depend on their car and the ability to drive and to buy gasoline. So that one gasoline shortage and suddenly, you know, civilization has collapsed. You know, in Russia, there was lots of public transportation. People didn't really, even the ones who owned private cars, didn't really rely on them on a daily basis. They were for, you know, trips to the countryside and things like that. Most of them just stayed in the garage most of the time. So it was a much more resilient way to live. It might be seen as poor, but on the other hand, during bad times, it really gave people a lot to work with.
Hmm. Well, why don't we switch to the United States now? In your book, you talk about, there's five stages of collapse, and the first one is the financial stage, and that is happening already. We can see it happening. So let's start out with the financial collapse. What is causing it?
Well, what has really caused it is the inability of the United States to live within its own means. This country overspends by about a third. If it stopped doing that, then a lot of a lot of existing rackets and junkets would really go away. You wouldn't have university and healthcare administrators making really fat salaries. You wouldn't have this ridiculously large finance sector where people earn $500,000 for doing nothing productive whatsoever. You wouldn't have the defense budget, which is larger than the defense budgets of most other countries in the world combined. All of that would just completely go away. And the fact is that, you know, the nation's leader are unable and unwilling to admit that this has to happen and are unable to do it. And so the workout for this is not just, you know, rebudgeting as a family would do, but an actual, you know, disaster, a scandal where the country basically tries to pay off its creditors in worthless money and then loses access to imports.
Well, one thing you say in your book is that when growth stops and the whole system kind of implodes, let's go into that a little bit.
Yes, well, the entire economy and the entire economics profession is predicated on this idea that there's endless economic growth, that there's infinite growth possible on a finite planet. And if that seems preposterous, that's because it is. Now, the fact is that growth has stopped quite a while ago. Back in the late 90s, really meaningful growth has stopped, and what looks like growth since then is really expansion of debt, which is basically sort of a way of making it look like the economy is growing on paper, whereas it, in fact it is shrinking. And you can definitely see that it's doing worse and worse every year by looking at how many university graduates can't find jobs, by looking at how many people are on food stamps, by looking at how many people are denied their retirement savings and end up being borderline destitute in their old age. It's an increasingly impoverished country. But the politicians and the Wall Street people have found a way to make it look on paper as if everything is fine by inflating equities, by injecting fake printed money, and various other gimmicks. And these gimmicks are working not so well anymore. I think the workout is going to be that the Federal Reserve and the U.S. government, they basically will lose control over interest rates on their debt. Mm-hmm. And then it will become obvious to everyone that, you know, basically the promises of the U.S. government, the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, is completely worthless. It's a fiction.
Well, isn't there kind of a... Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask, it's sort of a, seems to me like a kind of a circular process here that, you know, that to pay the debts requires growth. And so this this kind of spurious growth is sort of what encourages people to invest in U.S. debt. I guess there's sort of diminishing returns on this process. So,
the idea has been to, since you can't really have real growth, to blow financial bubbles. So we had the dot-com bubble, which imploded. Then we had the housing bubble, which imploded. Now, right now, we have the fracking bubble, which is imploding as we speak, because mm-hmm. fracking is really a money-losing proposition with incredible devastating environmental impacts that will persist for thousands of years as these thousands of well casings break down and leak toxic chemicals into the groundwater throughout the country. But it's meaningless in terms of stimulating the economy in any real sense.
What about would you consider all this the smartphone, is that a bubble too? Everybody wants the latest smartphone, the latest gadget, the latest this or that. Is that a bubble, or is that something? Is there something real going on there?
Well, when you can't find any real way to make money, to create wealth in any significant way, then you start charging people for things they used to do for free. So, for instance, people used to just talk to each other face-to-face. Mm-hmm. But now they have to buy some electronic gadget and sign a contract in order to call each other on their smartphone. You know, that's just something that seems to happen that people think is going to help, but really it's not going to. Really, it's not that significant a factor.
Okay, I think we'll take another little break to talk our friends out there at the membership desk, telling people why KBOO is worthwhile to keep it going.
Thanks, Per. We're not blowing any bubbles here. We're not blowing any smoke. We're talking about difficult issues because this stuff needs to be in our consciousness. We need to be apprehending these issues, thinking this through so that we can move forward. And one way that you can move forward is by picking up the phone and calling 877-500-5266. Do it right now. $60 minimum pledge. You can get a copy of this book. Per's been speaking with Mr. Dmitry Orlov. He's in his book, he's recounting his personal experience actually witnessing the collapse of the Soviet Union, the five stages that he's talking about, and we're comparing it to the situation that we're in right now. The first stage is where the economic system starts to come apart. We here at KBOO are able to sidestep that somewhat, but what it means is that we have to come to you and we have to ask for your support, your direct support. It is money, but we need the money. The number is 877-500-5266. And we are on the web, kboo.fm. You can donate that way, or you can come down to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue and have one of those personal face-to-face conversations with a real human being, and it won't cost you a penny. We're not getting you to sign any contracts. We're saying, hey, make a one-time commitment. This pledge drive, do it. It'll be easy. It'll be over before you know it, and then you can go back to listening to such guests as Dmitry Orlov, who is on Per's show, Fight the Empire, this morning.
And if you did come down to the station and you did pledge $60, and you, or maybe you gave us your credit card right here and now, or a check, then you could take away Dmitry's book, which I was just looking at. I decided to turn to the section on financial collapse and alternatives to money. And in our situation, we're still not able to switch to alternatives to money. He's talking about things that have intrinsic value. Put your wealth in things that have intrinsic value. And I was leafing through his book here, and some of this is pretty familiar. I think in 2008, I certainly thought a lot about, you know, if I've got loose cash, where could I put it that would provide intrinsic value? And I think one of the things is that if you don't support the organizations that you care about that enrich your life, then you have missed out on putting some of your wealth into something that has intrinsic value. The number here is 877-500-5266. 877-500-5266.
Victoria's talking about wealth. One of the ways that we generate wealth here at KBOO is we spread the knowledge. We give you information that can't be taken away from you. We provide thoughtful analysis. We give an opportunity for feedback and interaction. People call on the station and they get a chance to interact with authors, musicians, etc., etc. And this builds wealth. But the first thing that we need, and the reason that we're here today putting in all these extra hours, is because we need to make the case to you that it's time for you to step up and do your part. You've been listening. You've been enjoying this wealth. The way you do it right now is by dialing 877-500-5266. 877-500-5266. I don't mind repeating the number to you because it's just that important to me. I've had a chance to see what it means to be a part of this KBOO community, and I want to extend to you the opportunity to do it and to do it right now. The number is 877-500-5266. It's a tiny dent in your pocketbook, but it will make all the difference to what we do here.
And one of the ways of thinking about this, I took a workshop quite a long time ago where there was a long discussion about what is the meaning of money. And you can look at it in lots of different ways. You can, but what it really boils down to is it's an exchange of life energy, meaning it's a very easy way for me to hand something off to someone else and give them support in their life or vice versa, whether it's through my work that I attain some money and then I can give it to KABU. Doesn't matter, but think about it that way. Instead of status or, you know,
it's power.
Buy another thing. It's our life energy coming together. So 877-500-5266. 877-500-5266. Call us. Give us a little bit of your life energy in the form of cash.
Call us now.
Okay, back to my guest, Dmitry Orlov. Well, we got several other stages, but I don't think we get to all of them. But we have this. The next stage you write about is the commercial, and then there's a political. They sort of almost merge into each other. But in the commercial section, you talk about the gift economy.
Yes, I think that basically people are very used to the idea that they can get whatever they need simply by paying for it. And that's turning out to be not true in some cases because people don't really want to accept the U.S. dollar and people don't really want to do business with Americans throughout the world. So when Americans go traveling these days, they find that they can't open a bank account, that they can't exchange a certain amount of their money. This is already the case in Mexico. And this will happen in more and more of the world. And eventually it'll come here too. It doesn't matter how many worthless U.S. dollars you have, you still can't get what you need. So you have to come up with different arrangements based on gift and barter and various types of mutual self-help to substitute for the commercial services that everyone is used to. Basically, the mercantilist model that everybody is taught from the childhood here is the thing to follow, is failing people more and more. And the culture is very resilient to accepting any alternatives at this point. But if people really do want to make it through this transition, then they will have to abandon these ideas of, wherewithal. And come up with a better plan.
Well, in your book, it was very interesting. You have you devote a few pages to the life of Peter Kropotkin, who a lot of people these days don't even know who he was. But he was a very well-known Russian anarchist back in the 1800s. He lived into the the Russian Revolution. Can you tell us? We got a few minutes left. Can you tell us a little bit about Kropotkin?
Well, yes, he was a scientist, and the reason he came up with his ideas about anarchy, which is basically absence of hierarchy, is that he studied the behavior of animals and found out that animals in general don't compete with members of their own species. They cooperate, and the ones that cooperate the best tend to outcompete other species. So loner or aggressive animals don't tend to make it very well, whereas the gregarious and animals that help their own kind tend to do much better. And then he found out the organizing principles involved are really principles that don't involve any kind of a fixed hierarchy, such as human societies tend to evolve, that everything is very fluid and dynamic and based on roles. And so he went on to extend this to how human groups can function, and lo and behold, discovered that the anarchically organized groups are much more efficient and do much better. And it's something that I've experienced myself. I've worked in a number of tech startup companies, and when they're small, they tend to be anarchic, and they tend to innovate very fast. And then as they get bigger, they build up a hierarchy, and they cease being able to innovate. So by the time you get to a gigantic organization like Microsoft, it becomes completely incapable of doing anything new at all.
Well, I think...
And that's kind of like the trend.
Uh-huh. Well, I wish we had more time because there's so much in this book that we could talk about, but it's like what's competing is communities are competing, not lone individuals. But we've been talking with Dmitry Orlov, who is the author of The Five Stages of Collapse. which is yours for a $60 minimum pledge. It's really worth reading. Dmitry Orlov, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Well, this is Per Fagring. Stay tuned for Radio Cascadia.
Hey, good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, 10 o'clock. And Air Cascadia is coming up next. In 15 minutes on Flashpoints today, two major pro-immigrants' rights bills are signed by the governor of California. We'll hear about what comes next. And Culture Clash founder Richard Montoya talks about the recent passing of his father, Joe Montoya, internationally known poet, artist, and cutting-edge revolutionary in the Chicano movement. At 11 today, hear a two-part Between the Covers show. First, Gene Bradley interviews mystery writer Craig Johnson about his new Sheriff Longmire novella, Spirit of Steamboat. And in the second half of the show, Lisa Loving interviews writer Jesmyn Ward about her new memoir, Men We Reaped. Ward writes about growing up in poverty with a family struggling to stay together and survive in the rural South. That's all coming up this morning on The Mighty Boo. It is Pledge Drive. Give us a call at 877-500-5266. Stick around for Air Cascadia with Chris Andre. Headlines, interviews, and commentary next on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to help sponsor the 8th Annual Northwest Indian Storytelling Festival to take place Friday and Saturday, October 18th and 19th at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday, October 20th at 1 p.m. The Friday evening event will take place at PCC Cascade, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland, and the Saturday and Sunday events will take place at the Native American Youth and Family Center, 5135 Northeast Columbia Boulevard in Portland. This year's festival features some of the Northwest's most gifted tribal tellers, tribal drumming and singing, an opening prayer, and a silent auction. This event is a benefit for the Northwest Indian Storytellers Association. More information can be found at KBOO.org.